Hello and welcome back. My name is Rabbi Avi Heller. Together we're learning Masechet Moed Katan. We find ourselves on Daf Yud Gimel Amud Bet. That's 13b. We're on the first wide line. And today we're going to finish the second perek, the second chapter. This series of recordings is a joint project of OU Torah, the OU Department of Synagogue Services, and the Daf HaShavua Foundation. Our Mishnah says, Mochrei Peirot Ksut V'Kelim Mochrim B'Tzina. That those who were selling fruit on the festival, or clothing on the festival, or household objects on the festival, they could sell them privately as long as they were selling them for the sake of the festival. So this is a duplicate idea. One thing is you're only allowed to sell them if you're selling them to people who need them on the festival, or possibly if you have nothing to eat, but that's not our case here. You're selling them to people who need to use them on the festival. So the commerce is not regular commerce. It is only for immediate needs. And secondly, you don't want it to look like you're engaged in regular commerce, so you do it in a more private way. And exactly what that means in a private way, I think, would be dependent on, you know, the circumstances and culture, but it could mean that you only open for a limited number of hours, or that you have signage that says that you're selling specific things for the holidays, or other ways, or you only sell out of your house instead of out of your store. There may be different ways in which you do it in a more private setting so that it doesn't look like it's business as usual. Now, in addition, we had a phrase in the Mishnah that said that a number of industries, tzayadin, that's trappers, Dashoshot, people that worked grain mills, vigrosot, and people that ground up beans, that some of these workers who were also allowed to do their work on the holiday for the sake of the holiday, some of them were machmir on themselves to not do their work. And we want to know what exactly was the chumrah. Because once we know what the chumrah is, we know what the law is. Ibailahu, they asked the question of them in the Beit Midrash. Hein hachmir al atzmam, they were machmir on themselves not to do work on Chol HaMoed. Delo havu avde klal. Does that mean they were machmir not to do their work at all? Odilma, or maybe de havu avde bitzina, that they did it in private. In other words, it's possible that they were allowed to do their work for the sake of the festival in public, but they were machmir on themselves to do it privately. Or ikar hadin is that you have to do it privately, and they were machmir on themselves not to do it at all. Tashma, so come and listen, or come and learn. We're going to learn a source that might shed some light on this. Mochrei peirot, sellers of fruits, ksut, clothing, vekelim, and household objects. Mochrim betzina, they can be sold privately, litzorach hamoed, for the sake of the festival. Rabbi Yossi Omer, Rabbi Yossi said, Tagare Teveria, the merchants of Teveria, hein hechmiru al atzman, they were machmir on themselves, shelo yehu mochrin kol ikar, that they didn't sell objects at all. So here, clearly, the chumrah is that they were machmir on themselves not to do their work at all. Tzadei chayot ve'ofot v'dagim, those who trap wild animals, birds, and fish, tzadin betzina l'tzor hamoy, they may trap them privately for the sake of the festival. These are all things that might be used for the festival, especially fish, because fish do not keep for very long, especially without refrigeration. In both the Art Scroll and the Koran Gemaras, they bring a cute, they mention that it's quotes in the Yerushalmi, that there were a number of fish merchants, we'll see here in a second as well, but there were a number of fish merchants that were machmir on themselves not to fish on Chol HaMoed, and Rav Ami actually cursed them, or he yelled at them, because of the fact that they were being machmir on themselves, there was a fish shortage, and then people couldn't enjoy the fish on the festival, and that was undoing all their good work. It's nice to be machmir for yourself in order to protect the festival, but if that means that no one else can enjoy the festival, then yatsa scharo behefsedo, you lose all of your intention. Okay, Rabbi Yossi Omer, Rabbi Yossi says again here, Tzadei Akko, the trappers of Akko, which may include the fishermen as well, or maybe just the trappers of wild animals and birds, Hein hechmiru al atzman, they were machmir on themselves, Shelo yehu tzadin kol ikar, that they didn't trap at all. Dashoshe chilka targis v'tisane, those who were grinders or pounders of grain, the Gemara will explain the difference in a minute between chilka, targis, and tisane, three kinds of grain. Doshishin Bitsina, they would pound the grain in private, Litzor Hamoid, for the sake of the festival. Rabbi Yossi Omer, Rabbi Yossi said, Dashoshit Sipore, particularly the pounders in Sipore, Hein Hechmir Alatzmam, Shelo Yuhu Doshishin Kol Ikar. They were Machmir on themselves, that they didn't do this work at all. So we see that in three different industries, we have three northern Israeli towns. We had Akko, Tzipori, and Tveria, both towns in the north near Lake Tveria, like near Lake Tiberias, where in certain industries they were machmir on themselves not to do their work at all. And this seems to indicate that when we say they were machmir on themselves in the Mishnah, that it means they were machmir not to do the work at all. Now Abaye adds in a parenthetical comment, Amar Abaye, Chilka Chada. We talked about three kinds of grain, chilka, targis, and tisane. Chilka is when, chilka chada latarte. Chilka is when they would pound the grain, they did the preparation of the grain, where they pounded it so that it split from one piece into two pieces. Right, and that is maybe perhaps related to the word chilka, is lichalek, would mean to divide into two. Targis chada litlat. When they did targis, they pounded the grain in a way that separated it from one piece into three pieces, so it was a little more crumbled. And perhaps this is related to the word, targis may be related to the word tri geese, like a triple, the word triple, to break it into three parts. And tisane chadalarba. Tisane was they broke one piece into four pieces. It's more like, more broken down into farfel than the other four. So these are four kinds of preparation, and I guess you needed that grain to be pounded in different ways depending on what you were making. Kiata Ravdimi, however, when Ravdimi came, he gave a different interpretation of what it meant, of what this word meant. Specifically, here we're referring to the word chilka. Rather than saying that chilka meant grain that you divided from one piece into two pieces, he said it referred to kunta, which might be spelt, or it might be a kind of wheat that in the Koran they translated as emmer wheat. Emmer wheat was a kind of wheat that's like the original wheat, and that was discovered in Israel early in the last century. Was a form of original kind of wheat. So instead of saying that it's a kind of preparation of wheat, it's talking about that it's a kind of grain. So we're going to discuss this a little bit. Meitve, we'll ask a question. Chilka targis v'tisane. We have a tradition about these three kinds of grain. Tmeim b'chol makom. They are tame every place. Now, what we mean by their tame every place is that there was a distinction between villages, outlying villages, small villages, and towns. We sometimes have such distinctions in halacha between villages and cities. And particularly in this case was because in villages and cities, they prepared their grain differently. And the reason why grain would become tameh is only after it becomes huchshar latameh. In other words, dry grain is not susceptible to tumah, but once it becomes soaked in water, it does become tameh. It does become susceptible to tumah. So the assumption here was by saying that it's tame in every place, what we're saying is that both in the villages and in the cities, they prepared the grain by soaking it in some way or another, and therefore it could become tame in both places. Bishlam lamanda amar chada latarte litlat ula arba. This makes sense according to the opinion that what chilka means is that you separate it, is that you break it from one piece into two pieces, that Targis is separating it from one into three pieces, and Tisani is one into four. Mishum hachi tmeim b'chol makom. This is the reason why it's tamei in all the places, di'it kashur, because it becomes prepared for tumah. In other words, in order to pound the grain into different pieces, you first had to soak it, and then you would break it. And the presumption here is that there were a number of different stages, but that maybe you had to soak it in order to husk it, that you would take off the husk, and then you would break it into different pieces. But there was a preparatory process that involved the grain coming into contact with water, both in the villages and in the cities. Ella lamanda amar, but according to the opinion that says it was kunta, that it's spelt or emmer wheat, amai tmein b'chol makom, why would it be tamein in all the places? Haloit kashur, it would not be prepared for Tuma. The assumption here is that in the villages, they didn't necessarily soak their grain, whereas in the cities, they did soak their grain because they had higher quality control. So all things being equal, if we're just talking about a type of grain, one would assume that in the cities where they did soak their grain, it would be tame, but in the villages where they didn't soak their grain, it wouldn't be tame. So this seems like a nafgamina would be an outcome, depending on what we mean. In this case, since the Mishnah seems to say that it's tame in both places, it makes more sense to say that these three kinds of grain are kinds of ways in which you prepare grain, not the actual grain itself. The Gemara answers, however, kagon demikalfan. No, the truth is that even in this situation, this type of grain had to be husked before it was prepared. And in order to husk it, you had to soak it in order to soften it. So you cannot really tell either way which is the proper version of it. We're going to try again. Kigon demikalfan, they husked it. De'ilav deshari lehu b'maya, that if they didn't soak it in water, lo have miklafa, they weren't able to take off the outer husk of the grain. Va'amrei kari lachilka. And why did they call it chilka? Meaning chilka sounds like you divide it in half, but here they say it differently. Deshakel chilkiyahu, that they would take off its husk. So in this case, the chilka itself refers to the hard outer casing of the grain, and they called it chilka because you had to soak it in order to take off the outer husk. So we try again, meitve, we ask a different question. Hanoder min hadagan, someone takes a neder from grain. In other words, he says, I am not going to get any benefit from grain. Now, in the case of nedarim, whenever we're talking about vows, we have to know which things are included and which things are not included, and that usually is going to depend on what exactly is meant in common parlance by the word dagan, by the word grain. So in this case, we're going to add something that we don't seem to want to include. Asur af beful hamitzri yavesh. So when a person says, I am not going to get any benefit from grain, he's also not allowed to get benefit from these dry Egyptian beans. Even though they're not grain, apparently what they would do is they would grind up the beans, and they would pile them into piles that looked just like grain piles. So since they look just like grain piles, they're included in the prohibition. This is interesting because it may give a possible explanation for how kitniot became usur on Pesach, even though kitniot are beans, they're legumes, and they're not similar to grain. If they are ground up and piled into piles just the way grain is, then they seem very similar, and in some halachic ways, they are comparable. However, umutar balach, but he's permitted to eat the beans before they're ground up. Umutar ba'orez, and he's permitted to eat rice, so that there's an argument that rice and legumes ought to be separate, but we're not making any halachic statements here. And then it goes on and says he's also permitted to eat chilka, targis, and tisane. Bishlam alamanda amar chada latarte, chada latlat, v'chada larba. This makes sense according to the one that says chilka is 1 into 2, targis is 1 into 3, and tisane is 1 into 4. Shapir makes it fine. Denafka lehu mitorat dagan. Because once you soak them and you pound them and you husk them, they are no longer considered to be grain objects. They're now separate. And since they are broken into pieces and not turned into piles, they don't look like grain either. So even though they are grain, once you've prepared them, they no longer fit into the category of grain. Dagan here is referring to unprepared grain. Once the grain is prepared in a different way, it's no longer in the category of dagan. Ela lamanda amar, but according to the one that says kunta, that says spelt or emmer wheat, dagan ma'alyuhu, it is dagan. It's unprepared wheat. You haven't pounded it yet. We're talking about a particular kind of grain. Kasha, the Gemara says, that is a question. So the Gemara seems to conclude that that the final answer is that chilka, targis, and tisani are 3 different ways of pounding and breaking up the grain, not referring to spelt or emmer wheat. However, kasha is a little different than tiyuvta. Kasha means it's a question, but it doesn't mean that it's a slam dunk, it's not a TKO. It doesn't knock it out 100%, as opposed to the word tiyuvta, which means it's refuted. So it's a question, and it seems like the sugya tilts in that direction, but maybe it's not 100%. Finally, this is our last sugya in the chapter. Rav Huna, Shara lehu lehenhu krufaita. Rav Huna permitted to these spice merchants, that's what krufaita are, spice merchants, lemezal, to go lezabune and sell their wares on Chol HaMoed, ki orchayu, in their regular way, bishuka, in the shuk. So in other words, Rav Huna allowed the spice merchants to open up shop on Chol HaMoed. So that seems very lenient. Etve Rav Kahana, Rav Kahana asked an attack question on him on this. Chanut ptucha listav poteach v'noel kedarko. He said we have different rules for Chol HaMoed as to how much you're able to open up your shop. So if you have a store, a chanut, that's ptucha listav, it's opened up to stav. Now stav are referring to the Greek word stoa, which are chairs. So what happened is you would have a main thoroughfare in the shuk, and then you'd have like a side branch, and sometimes you'd have like a little place where there were benches and people could sit there and, you know, rest. And there were stores that were off of that resting area. So those stores were kind of like out in the boonies. They weren't on the main thoroughfare. They were hidden away in these sort of like side branches. So since they were already bitsina by themselves, poteach v'noel kedarko, those stores that were off the main thoroughfare, they could open up and close in their regular fashion because they were already kind of hidden from view. However, if you had a store that was ptucha l'rishut harabim, that was open up to the main thoroughfare, poteach achat, they could open up one door, v'noel achat, and they kept one door closed. And that was a way of showing we're half open. We're not 100% open. We're only half open. We're only doing business, for what's allowed on the festival. This reminds me, in a way, I live in Bergen County, so we have blue laws, so you're not allowed to sell certain things on Sundays, lahavdil. So, for instance, sometimes you'll have a store like Costco that's open on a Sunday, but they're only partially open. The store is open, but they have all these signs, we can't sell this, we can't sell that, certain parts are covered, certain parts of the store are closed, so it's kind of similar to that. The Erev Yom Tov Achron Shel Chag, however, on the very last day of Chol HaMoed, when people are getting ready for the last Yontif, then motziu ma'ater et shukei ha'ir b'peirot, then they would bring out and adorn the shuk of the city with fruits. In other words, they had a sort of like custom to make it festive on the last day of Chol HaMoed, because first of all, it was during the holiday, and second of all, people were getting ready for Yontif, so they made this sort of like, they made it sort of festive, with all the fruits being put out so people could buy them for the holiday. Bishvil, in order, kavod yom tov ahron, to give honor to the last day of the festival. So mipnei kavod yom tov ahron in order for the sake of the honor of the festival, yes. Shalom mipnei kavod yom tov lo, but if it was not for the sake of yom tov, then no. So his question seems to be that you can't open up your store just to open up your store. It has to be either for the sake of the festival, or if you want to be lenient on the last day of Chol HaMoed, for the sake of Kavod Yom Tov Acharon, for the honor of the last Yontif. So he answers, Lo Kasha, that's not a question. Ha bepeire, ha betavlin. There is a difference between the source here that's talking about fruits, in which case you can only do it for the sake of the last day of Yontif, and the tavlin, which were the merchants, the krufaita, that Rav Huna allowed to open up. Now, this is hard to understand because the idea here would be that the spice merchants were allowed to open up because people had to buy spices on the festival. They couldn't buy spices before the festival, and they needed them for the sake of the festival. But the fruit merchants, a person didn't necessarily need to buy fruits on the festival. They could have bought fruits before the festival, and they could have bought enough quantity that they didn't need to buy them on the festival. To me, it would seem exactly the opposite. We buy fruits, even with refrigeration, we buy fruits pretty frequently because fruits go bad, but spices we only buy once in a long while. So it's a little hard to understand what exactly they were thinking of. Rashi says that these are not spice merchants. They were merchants of cabbages and leeks, which go bad even faster than fruits. So if you look at it that way, then you'll say cabbages and leeks, you can only keep them for a day or two, so you have to buy them on the festival. Whereas fruits at least will keep long enough, you could buy them Erev Yontif and they'll last through the festival. But that and the reason for that is because krufaita might be related to the word kruv, which is a cabbage. But it seems like what we mean here are spices. So there are different approaches to it. One way of looking at it is that we're talking here about crushed spices or ground spices. So they're really most efficacious, they're strongest if you get them when they're really fresh. So you want to buy fresh ground spices on the holiday itself, whereas fruits you could buy beforehand and they will last at least for the week of the festival. Or perhaps what we can say is, regardless of exactly how it worked out in Talmudic commerce, that we can establish a principle here. And the principle is, things that need to be bought fresh, the merchants are able to open up on Chol HaMoed so that they can be bought fresh and they can open up in their regular way. Things that don't need to be bought fresh, but people might have a need of them, either for the festival or for the sake of the last day of the festival, they can open up at least partially, but they should, you know, do it a little bit bitzina, a little bit in a way of saying this is not our regular way of doing business. But they shouldn't open up fully because it seems like business as usual, because people ought to have or could have bought all of their needs in that regard before the holiday. So even if we can't apply, don't know exactly which objects they're talking about here in the Talmudic shuks, we could apply it to our current things, things that really need to be bought fresh for the sake of the holiday, as opposed to things that don't really need to be bought for the sake of the holiday. That takes us to the end of the chapter. Hadron Alach Misha Hafach, Hadron Alach Misha Hafach, Hadron Alach Misha Hafach. We finished the second chapter of Moed Katan. We have one more chapter to go, in which we'll talk about all the laws of Avelut, of mourning, and we will start in our next recording. Have a wonderful day.